Coming at you with another Kicking It With The Colonels podcast and the official sports podcast of EKU Athletics. That needs to be our tagline. We need to have that in the tagline. Wes Chandler here with you. KJ, our co-host, is enjoying summer break out in Texas. And I know you may not know this, Coach. We're here with the newest Colonel, is going to be our new guest, Jan Weisberg, the head baseball coach. Our co-host on the podcast is a softball player.
Okay.
A current softball player, first team all conference, you know, a stud. and so she's, I'm sure she's going to watch us here when this podcast comes out. KJ, hope you're doing well. And I know, speaking of softball, you got to meet the legendary, the coach, Jane Worthington, and just talk about the legacy that is EKU softball. I know that's one of the first things you guys got to talk about when you first were introduced here on campus.
Yeah, and I've known a lot about Jane and her program from, you know, my time at UK where I was up for 13 years, but also when I was at Transylvania for 1 year, actually coached with the softball coach there who played here and heard a lot about the program. And then good friend of mine is the head coach up at Purdue, and Jane's son played for him this past year. And that was one of the first calls I got after taking the job was, man, you got to go meet her, because had her son, and they're awesome people. So, and she was one of the first people that stopped into my office, and thankfully so.
She's legendary on this campus. I tell you what we need to do. We need to get the marketing people together, and we need to have a promotion, a Jan and Jane, some type of promotion. We need to get that in the works.
Yeah.
But first of all, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. How are you settling into Richmond? How do you like things here in Richmond so far?
Yeah, it's been fast. I don't know if settling in is that yet. You know, my family's been in and out. I've been here. I thought I would be here for maybe a week and then go back down to Georgia and kind of, you know, start to think about packing up the house. But I have not found time to leave yet. So I've been up here 3 weeks. Family just got back in town the other day. We're in an on-campus apartment. Hopefully after the 4th of July, as you know, our roster development slows down a little bit, the assistant coaches, the whole staff will be here. We move into a house on July 11th here downtown. I think it'll be a lot better here in about 3 weeks, but enjoying it so far, that's for sure.
If there's one thing you know about being a baseball coach for all these years, it's how to live out of boxes and live out of suitcases.
Yeah, oh yeah. No, we're good with that.
You've been in the area before. You mentioned your time with UK and with Transylvania. So you're familiar with the area. How much has the area changed since you were here, you know, a few decades ago?
Yeah, I think that the bleed of Lexington almost into Richmond, you know, basically with, you know, Lexington expanding a little bit and things out the bypass expanding a little bit and you know, up Boonesboro Road area being developed. It's not nearly as much. So a little more traffic than last time I left, but reminded of just how beautiful it was, you know, as I drove back onto campus and into the area, just didn't realize how much I missed it, you know, and how beautiful it was. So great to be back.
It's been about 3 weeks now since your introductory press conference. When you look back at that day, what did that day mean to you personally?
It was a happy day. You know, it was a little bit of a homecoming. You know, my wife was born and raised in Harrodsburg. Her father went to school here. Her uncle was head of the physical plant here for 30 years. She had a cousin that you know, worked in the housing department. I think was head of housing here. And then just the outreach of a lot of players that I hadn't been in really close contact with from Lexington. A few came to the press conference, but just getting back and looking forward to rekindling a bunch of relationships. So it was a really fun and happy day.
And I was there at the press conference, and one of the things that caught my eye was you said you had a personal connection to here. It's like your father-in-law was graduated from here, right? Is that
yep.
right? Yeah. So you felt that personal connection here.
Yeah, and with her family, you know, being invested in it and had talked with the previous athletic director, you know, when the job had come open a couple of opportunities ago, I think, and my wife was excited about learning more about it. But yeah, the connections to it. So it's not just a step in the career. It's not just the job that was intriguing. It was where the job was, which I think is going to make it more fulfilling, you know, as we win here and do these things, that it's the special connection, not just the baseball team.
And one of the things I also thought was interesting in that press conference was you were mentioning about after your playing career had ended, and just how you got into coaches. It all started at the Shays, and
you
were wanting to get back into banking a little bit, maybe. How did that door open? And for those that did not attend the press conference, how did that door into coaching start for you?
Yeah. So, I mean, it was, you know, when I finished playing at UK, I had one more year to graduate. And back then it wasn't, you know, you weren't necessarily on a fifth year scholarship. So, you know, without the athletic aid that I had, parents had said, "Hey man, you got this much for school. This extra year is kind of on you." So the need to get a job, but that year was pretty much spent, interviewing and thinking about my, you know, my future. And, I thought it was going to be banking back home in California. So up in San Francisco and LA, we had kind of, you know, been setting up interviews for after the semester. But in the meantime, to make money, I had worked at a restaurant in junior college. I loved to cook. So knew the general manager at DeShays from actually recruiting. We would take recruits there a lot and things like that. And yeah, I ended up cooking at DeShays for a year and it was a blast. But that going into the spring semester, Coach Madison called and just kind of said, "Hey, you know, I'd love to have you kind of come out and unofficially be a student assistant and, you know, work with the catchers and help Coach Butler with the hitters." And I was missing baseball at the time. And it's never easy when you step out of it. You know, it's a part of your life is gone. And, you know, while I was looking forward to the next chapter of my life, coaching was not on my brain. You know, I said, "Man, this would be a great little transition, get my last piece of it and move on," and did it. Had a blast. And it's kind of like I said in the press conference, I was hooked. And, you know, Coach Madison approached me at the end of that year and said, "Hey, the volunteer coach is moving on. Would you want to slip into that role next year?" And, you know, that's when I kind of made the decision of, okay, let's get in and give this 5 or 6 years and see if it's where I want to go. And if it's not, then we'll get into, you know, the corporate world, so to speak. But fell in love with it. And I was fortunate in 94, another full-time position opened up. And that's when I slid into coach's staff and I stayed there till 2003.
Do you miss the Shays?
I do.
It was a staple.
I know. Yeah. It did break my heart. You know, I don't know how long ago it was, but probably 5 years ago when I came in. And just obviously that whole Triangle Park area has changed so much and Rupp Arena. But to see the Shays gone was it kind of hurt a little bit.
Did you have a favorite meal to cook?
I was a hot brown guy.
Yeah, okay.
So I was on hot brown duty. So on game night, you know, I probably made, I don't know, probably 200 hot browns. Wow. And that was my station right there.
For sure. You've been coaching at a couple of places. When you talk about like your coaching philosophy, is it something that you've taken a few things from spot A, spot B, and kind of molded together into what you're going to incorporate here at EKU?
Yeah, I don't think it's from spot A to spot B as much as evolving as a coach, just over time, no matter where you are. You know, one of the best things that happened to me was, you know, I kind of was at Transylvania for a year. I guess you'd call it as kind of a placeholder year in between UK. And the Birmingham Southern job was obviously a special job. I knew a lot about the program. They won an NAI national championship, but they had made this move to Division I for about 5 or 6 years and really didn't fit. There was 1,200 students. So they made the move to go back to Division III. And when the job opened up, I knew what could be done there. You know, it was to create a national power with everything that they had. And Joe Dean was the athletic director, who was actually an assistant basketball coach at UK back in the early 80s with Joe B. Hall. And Coach Madison called him and said, "Man, you'd be crazy not to interview this guy." And he was done interviewing people. I didn't even know about the job. Coach Madison called him. He called me within 5 days. I was hired, but we didn't have a team because a lot of the players had left during that transition to Division I to Division III. So the 2007 season didn't have a team. It was recruit, build this team from scratch, but it really allowed me to sit back and think about, you know, hey, what have I done well as a coach? Or even ask former players, "Hey, how can I get better? What is your philosophy as a head coach?" But I think it's really evolved over the years. When I first started as a young coach, it was a lot of simply production driven, kind of what can you do for me as a player? And that's all I really cared about. To when I left Birmingham Southern, when you talk about when the school closed and guiding them through this tough time and making the World Series, by that time, I think I had evolved into a place where I was coaching out of love a little bit more, where, you know, more so, not that I didn't when I was a young coach, genuinely cared about, you know, am I helping this guy to become really successful when they get out of here, right? If there's a promotion to be had, is he going to be the one that gets it because of what he's learned? Is he going to be okay and not be fearful of starting his own company? You know, whatever it might be. And I think that's more of the, yes, the standards are still extremely high. Winning is still mission number one. But I think over the years, I've realized that, you know, mission number one of winning can still be attained while doing these other things personally. And I probably didn't realize that younger.
And you kind of touched on it, but I know Coach Madison played a huge role in just to get to where you are now.
Yeah. I mean, you know, obviously by offering me that first position and, you know, probably having faith in me as a young coach when, you know, I was a little stubborn and kind of wanted to do my own thing. But he had tremendous patience with me. And a lot of the lessons that he taught me, when I talk about evolving as a coach to really thinking about the entire person, the student part of the student athlete, and the person side of it. Those lessons probably didn't hit home until even, you know, 5 or 10 years after I stopped working with them. You know, it's like, now I get it. You know what I mean? And until you're a head coach, there's a lot of things that a head coach does that as an assistant, you just don't understand. You know, you've never had to sit down there and it's easy as an assistant to say, oh, just go do this, right? Or in this day and age, right? Like, hey, that guy's got to go but to sit down and look at that kid in the eye and understand what he's going through as a head coach, you don't see that as an assistant. So a lot of those lessons were learned later,
for sure. You mentioned your dad was a very successful high school basketball coach. So how did you get into baseball?
Yeah, and he's probably the first culprit for me falling in love with this game. You know, he was, my sister and I actually both played on the same little league team. She was actually better than me. So he coached us all through that and would take us to Giants games. And that's probably the reason I fell in love with this game was through him. And he's a physician by trade. He's an ear, nose, and throat doctor. But he's always had a passion for coaching. And he volunteered at a couple, you know, local Catholic schools, helping the baseball program. And then when my sister went to high school, he joined the staff of the girls' basketball team. And he and the head coach over the next 8 years kind of formed an absolute power, Archbishop Mitty, and played for a couple of state championships in California. And he's always been a student of whatever he's done. And you know, he's putting on tapes of Duke's game and watching the press and all that. So I think probably a little bit of the coaching bug, I caught that as I would see that a little bit.
Chatting with new EKU baseball head coach Jan Weisberg. And nowadays in college athletics, it moves at a supersonic speed. How's the roster coming? I know that's one of the main hurdles for any new coach taking over a program with the portal and everything. How's the roster looking?
It's going well. And you know, the first thing was to be a little bit slower and deliberate. You know, I don't care for, you know, the new age, I guess, where you come in and you just cut everybody. So there's conversations to be had with guys of who would like to stay. Maybe some guys are in the portal of okay, maybe moving on is a better fit for you. So figuring that part out and hiring a staff took the bulk of the time. And now we're kind of making all of a sudden, now that we've turned the corner and it's really, you know, gone from gathering names to now we're starting to move and make offers, is now is when it starts to move really quickly. But it's crazy. I mean, there's 5,600 kids in the baseball alone. And so it does allow you a little bit more time, you know, and you have to let some of the bigger fish kind of go and see where it's at. But now that that's kind of happened, now it'll start to move really quickly. But we feel good about where we're at. We're probably a little over halfway through.
What was the first team meeting with the guys since you got hired? What was that conversation like with some of the guys?
Yeah, so it was a Zoom call, you know, because a lot of them were already at home and I hadn't actually gotten here yet. But it was pretty much just laying out a vision for what this would be moving forward. You know, the fact that, man, we're not talking about the past or what might have been broken or what might not have worked, but just kind of my philosophy, right? It's a very high expectation, high achievement culture, but it's not, you know, hey, reach that bar, you're out. It's not just kicking you to the curb in this day of the portal. It's, no, I'm going to grab you by the shirt. I'm going to bring you over and kind of talk to them about, you know, someone's got their hands on the trophy right now. And my goal is to go rip it out of their hands. But every little thing we do is one step closer, right? So every phone call that I make to a recruit, you know, every alumni that I meet with, every meeting that I'm having with my staff, that's just getting one step closer. And it's kind of encouraging those guys of, that's kind of what this culture will be. So there are no days that we go easy, right? Because if we do, we didn't get a chance to take a step that day.
It really is a day-by-day process. And you look at things in the offseason, and I think the casual fan, they think that you got all this time off.
But yeah.
Really, the offseason is kind of where things are won. What can fans expect to see from EKU baseball between the lines?
Yeah, I think they'll see it, number one, a really competitive team. Maybe if you're looking closely, you'll see an incredibly tough team.
Yeah.
Because I just tell guys in sports, man, we're going to get punched in the face, and it's just get back up and go. So hopefully you'll see a fearless team, but more importantly, a team that will be fundamentally, like, we won't beat ourselves. You know, you may beat us on a day, but it's going to take your A game. We're not going to walk people. We're not going to throw the ball away. And then that's just kind of how we've always done. I've talked about all these championships that I've won and all the success. It's not shock and awe talent. It's not that I'm that much better of a coach than the other team, but it's these small competitive advantages, right? We're going to take care of the ball a little bit better. We're going to have a little more command on the mound. We're going to have really competitive at-bats. And I think that's what you'll see.
Baseball is really a game of inches.
And
sometimes those things are the difference between a win and a loss. You mentioned in your press conference, too, about the importance of, you know, we talked about the product on the field, but also off the field, being involved in the community, doing things the right way, and getting the alumni kind of engaged. And there were a lot of alumni there at your press conference. I know that means a big deal to you.
Oh, it does. If all we're thinking about is just winning and losing games, this is a hollow profession, right? Embrace the fact that we're in a community that supports this institution. You know, we're not in this major metropolis where it's just another thing to do. And I firmly believe that if you give them a really good product, they will get behind you 100%. But the backbone of any organization is its people. And those people understand, and that's one thing, yes, I've got a connection to the school, but I also know a lot about the program, right? I competed against Coach Ward, Coach Dominguez, Coach Steen, a lot of the really good players. You know, one of our players right now, Matt Berger, his dad, Brandon, played in the big leagues. Like, yeah, I competed against that guy, and it wasn't fun. But it's their program. They built this place, and I get to come into a program that isn't broken, right? They've won a lot here over the years. But, you know, all this stuff that's here in the locker room and this new facility, you know, the bulk of that was done by people who gave because they cared about this place, or people who gave because they didn't get to have a locker room like this. So our guys will understand that, right? Like, whoever's worn your number or played your position or sat in your locker built this for you, right? And your job is to leave it better for the next guy. And for them to understand that our ultimate goal, yes, is to win championships, but for me, it's to add value to this university, in particular, add value to this athletics department, you know, which means that, you know, every class that we go to is you're going to either make a good statement or a bad statement to this professor about what athletes at EKU are about. And it better be a good one.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, I've always been a proponent of, we're very fortunate, right? Is I get to make a living like being in a game that I love. That's not work to me.
Yeah.
You know, and these guys, not only do they get an education and some of it paid for, right, that's going to help them in life, but they get to go out in this beautiful place every day and play this great game. Like, we're fortunate. And we do believe in giving back. And I think there's a lot of things that we're looking at getting involved in here that, you know, it's not just for show. You know, and a lot of times my old athletic director used to get mad at me because he's like, why didn't you take pictures and put that on the website? You know, it's like, that's not why we're doing it, you know, but I do realize that it can add value. So that's a huge piece of it.
That Power E logo goes everywhere you go.
Yep.
I want to talk a little bit about some of your previous stops. It's been Division II, Division III in the past, and I'm sure that is sometimes rewarding, sometimes challenging. How did you overcome any obstacles with it being Division II, Division III, and how challenging was that, and how much are you looking forward to being in Division I?
Yeah, and even being in Division I here, there's some challenges compared to other Division I programs, right? But again, I think it goes back to mindset and perspective. And just a great example of that, you know, and I mentioned it earlier, when I was at Transylvania and I'd played against Birmingham Southern when I was at Kentucky, when they were, you know, NAI and they won a national championship, and while they were at the Division I. So I knew, man, they're making this move to Division III. I knew we can win a national championship there with everything that we had. And that was my perspective. Well, if you get into that first athletics department meeting now, there's a lot of really upset people because we've gone from Division 1 to Division 3. Oh, how am I going to get recruits in? How am I going to get, this done? Oh, my budget's going to be less. And do I really care about? So it's like, okay, yes, it has its challenges, but I looked at, can this realistically be done? Can we become one of the top 5 programs in the nation? And I said, with what I have, absolutely. Now, do I have 1 full-time coach? Okay, so what am I going to do? And it's like, okay, I'm going to call every coach that I know. Let's find these really bright young guys that want to get into coaching. Hey, man, I can give you an apartment. That's it. But I'm going to let you coach a position. And we were able over the years to attract these awesome young coaches. So what could be a negative, we turn it into a positive. Okay, one coach isn't one coach anymore. Now we've got 4 really good coaches every year. Yeah, you got to raise money. It's like, okay, am I going to complain about raising money, take away from, again, this mission of what can be done here? Like, if you focus on the negative, you're not going to reach it. But if you go, hey, man, if that's what I have to do to win a national championship, I'll go raise X dollars. It's painting fences. It's, this locker room right here, it would be me painting it. So that's okay. I'm willing to do that stuff. And, as you build that, and I think if people see that passion and they see what you're doing with the guys in the program, now they do start to give and it grows and it takes a lot more help. And then going to Division 2, it was nice because, okay, now I've got, 2 full-time coaches and 2 assistants and a really nice facility. So that's a lot better. But there's still challenges there, right? Is you can compete with 9 scholarships in Division 2, and we were only funded for about 6. So it's like, okay, now we got to raise the money to get scholarships so that we can go beat these people. And, again, people looked at some of the warts of it and the negatives of it. And I said, if that's all I have to do to win, I can do that. Up here, they might talk about, weather. They might talk about, oh, we've only got 13 scholarships and maybe some schools have more and not a huge, NIL presence in baseball. These aren't negatives to me. Again, I go here and I go, oh, now I've got 3 full-time assistants, and I've got an operations guy and a player development guy. Like, there's nothing I need here to do what this job takes to win. And that's develop players. And, so yeah, in spite of whatever challenges you may have, there's challenges everywhere. And I just never let the other guy worry about that. And again, that's one of those competitive advantages I've got over you. Like, whining, complaining, and making, excuses does nothing for you. So you'd look at that negative and you go, okay, is that really going to keep me from doing what I want to do? And no, it's not. So, that's kind of what I've learned from being at those places is, obstacles are obstacles if you let them be, I guess.
Kind of whatever it takes, and always have that eye on that prize.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to talk about your final year at Birmingham Southern. That was obviously a magical and kind of bittersweet, I'm sure,
yeah,
time for you. Take us through those that don't know, school wound up closing.
Mm-hmm.
You had that announcement. What was that time like for you from the time the announcement came that the school was going to close till getting to the World Series and obviously making a huge name for Birmingham Southern on a national stage?
Yeah, and I mean, it was cool. With the notoriety that we got out of that. But we were in the World Series in 2019, and the goal going in was to build a program that, would be one of the top 5 in the country, and we're actually the 4th winningest program. We got to this World Series. But that had actually been hanging over our head going into the 23 season was, through some, mismanagement back 10 years ago, a lot of factors are going into it. A lot of small schools right now, right? Is those small schools enrollments are dwindling. It's a lot like Lowe's and the mom and pop hardware store. The bigger schools are getting bigger, less people are going to school, more online. Typically those private schools are a little more expensive. So there's a lot of challenges and we didn't have a huge endowment to absorb it. And so COVID did hurt a little bit and it really shined a light on that. But the year before, we needed some help from the legislature to possibly pass a bill and get a 5-year loan that would help us, restructure, I guess. And, so that year, even we didn't know if we were going to stay open after that year in 23. And yet that year, we were the number 1 team in the country for the entire year with that black cloud hanging over us. And it was fun to lead the guys through that. But through that, I said, okay, if we make it through, there's a next year and what we thought would be 5 more years, I still got to recruit. And a lot of the other sports did not. And you really saw it the next year. So the legislature passed, hey, you're going to get this 5-year loan. So we got at least 5 years, we think. And then fast forward, the treasurer didn't release the funds in the fall. And we didn't even know if we'd be open after Christmas all of a sudden in 24. And So we had this cloud hanging over us, and now we're back, right back where we were the year before, going, okay, it's going to go back to the legislature, see if they can fix these loopholes, and then we'll get 5 years. And that black cloud was hanging over our head all year, and it was a heavier one than the year before because our guys thought they'd made it through, and then here we go again. So we were, for us especially, a subpar team, just a little above 500, fifth place in our conference, and it's a conference we had won, you know, or finished second in every year that I'd been there. Weren't in the top 20, and that was a shock for us. And then on you know, April 4th, when I told him, was a devastating day. I mean, just crying in the locker room. It was dark. It was stormy outside. And I just kind of laid it out for them that man, we talk about this a lot, that pain, uncertainty, and hard work are all either always in your life or right around the corner. And today there's a lot of pain, you know. And I said, we're going to keep processing this. There's no way to say, put it to the side. And I said, in 2 years, you're going to feel this pain. But, you know, I said, obviously there's hard work to be doing, but then there's this uncertainty. And I just told him, in this day and age, man, when transfer portal, you know, it's like, what about me? They had every opportunity just to abandon ship. We're not winning. Let's go find another school. Let's go do that. And I basically went back to what I was talking about in this locker room, right? Somebody's worn your jersey and sat in your locker that has built such a special program. And I said, your job is to finish. It doesn't mean winning a championship, doesn't mean going to the tournament, but just finish. Like, you know, if you're closing up shop, sweep the floors, take out the trash, stock the shelves, and leave it ready for the guy in the morning. And I said, because now there's nobody to pass it on to. And that was kind of my statement to him, was just finish. Because you've seen other sports quit. You've seen students stop going to class. You saw professors quit. You know, the year before, it's like, okay, classes are over at spring break. Like, we got to go find a job. You have a lot to do. And it's like, no, man, we're not going to quit. And kind of reminded him, it was Holy Week, and I reminded him, man, death after, you know, resurrection after death, light after dark. And I said, you know, we're not going to practice today, but I do want the pitchers to go in the outfield together and the hitters in the cage, like, not even structured. Just, I don't even care if you hit. Just do not go home alone after we just, you know, gave you this news. And sure enough, we go out 20 minutes later, bright sunshine, just like I told him. And the best batting practice I've ever seen. And I just said, because it's a release. You weren't thinking about your swing. It's just, baseball is fun. So we got him up and I said, let baseball just be the one happy place in your life. But I said, we're going to talk constantly about, hey, what is your next step while we're doing this? Because if I don't have those conversations with them, mom and dad keep asking them and it becomes a distraction. But the best thing that happened, man, we were on spring break. So the next day we went and played a road game. We were together and I just like, man, how's this going to go? And we just smoked them. And we go up to Kentucky, and rather than go on Thursday, we left on Wednesday because it was spring break. I was like, we're just getting out of here. And it was the best thing for us because for 5 days, 6 days, they're just together. They're not alone by themselves in the apartment. And we went up and had another good weekend, and then another good weekend, and we just caught fire. And it really became, honestly, just a masterclass of what we all know in sports, that when you're fighting for the guy next to you, and that's all that matters, good things are going to happen. And I think have to became get to. I don't have to go to weights today. I get to go to weights today. And I don't have to go to practice. I get to go to practice because, one, I can get away from all this pain that's around me and that. But it was really cool because, you know, we left campus. We won the regional up here in Lexington, played at the Legend Stadium. We kind of rolled through that. And then we had a really tough task going to super regional up at Denison, Ohio. And they were number two in the country. I think they were 43-6. The number two offense in the country and the fourth best pitching staff, and we're on the road. And I think at the time, maybe emotionally spent, right? Like, we get in the tournament, we did this, like, I think my guys might get flat, but then a documentary crew comes out and they're going to follow our progress. And I mean, it's lights, interviews, we're mic'd the whole way. And I think it gave our guys fuel, right? Because they realized, man, we're doing something special. And then every interview they had, it was USA Today, you know, it was NBC Nightly News. Hey, this might happen. You realize if they win this tournament, the school's going to be closed. Because when we went up to Ohio for that super regional, it was the closing ceremonies from campus. And then the next day was the last graduation of Birmingham Southern while we were gone. And it was really cool that every interview they gave, I think, it just added strength. Like, because they had to talk about, man, how resilient we are, how much grit you have. And a lot of times before a game, you know, I just talked to the guys, they're stretching. I said, why are we going to win today? Right. And the answer was the same every day. They haven't been through what we've been through. Like we're tougher. And we rode through that and get to the World Series. And yeah, it was really cool to see.
The rest, they say, is history.
Yeah.
And it was also bittersweet because 168 years.
Yeah.
That had been around.
Yeah.
Oh, insane. chatting with the EKU baseball head coach, Jan Weisberg, here on the podcast. And earlier we were talking about some of the things that have changed from outside the baseball field. Some of the things from the game standpoint have changed too. How much do you plan on using some of the new age numbers and analytics and measures that you can get by that standard into your game here at EKU?
Well, I think it's just like we talked about earlier, right? About you asked about coaching philosophy. Yeah. And if you don't evolve, you're going to get left behind. And I think it's the same thing with me is I don't jump off the deep end and buy into every decision that I'll make will be analytically driven. But you'd be a fool not to tap into information and technology. So yes, when you talk about first player development, right, is it's a big piece between video and now with the high speed cameras and the TrackMan and the all the metrics, you can really help, especially on the pitching side with things. It gives you more information as a coach. You know, there's a guy I played last year at Valdosta State that earlier in my career I never would have played because there's just too many strikeouts, right? But when you look at WRC plus or OPS plus, the on-base percentage plus, it's like, yes, there's a lot of strikeout, but there's also a lot of extra base hit. Or, the average exit velocity is above 95 when he puts it in play, which means, there's stats that go with that. That equates to, over 500 on base percentage on balls put in play. And so now you go, but this guy's at 91. That's not bad. Yeah, but statistically, it's 70% points lower. And those numbers don't lie. And while you can't make all your decisions based on that, if I don't do that, that guy is never in my lineup because I just simply go, oh, he strikes out too much for me. But when you look at it now analytically, you can show me that. Same thing, I used to bunt a lot more, runners at first and second, like almost a given. I'm sure I'm going to give up an out to move. But then you look and you go, man, depending on where you are in the order and how many, is it the second time through we've seen this pitcher at third? Because statistics say now, hey, expected run value is if you bunt, it may be 1.3, but if you don't, it's 1.98. And I'm going, well, that's half a run. But I'm never be one that will absolutely go by that either, because there's certain times where I go, man, I'm happy with one run here, so I will bunt. So, yes, I do dive in, and I love all of that. And that's one reason why, as I assembled the staff the way that I did, that I did choose some younger guys who have grown up, and that's really all they've known in player development is that, because, I can learn a lot from them, and I have learned a lot from assistant coaches in that area. And that's kind of why I've done it is it's a huge part of our game now.
It's changed the game forever.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really has. So tell me about the opening at EKU and how you found out about it. Was it something you were looking to dive into, or tell me how that process was like, what that process was like for you?
Yeah, no, it's something that, I was 100% happy where I was at. I honestly thought that, Valdosta may be the place that I retire, because you didn't live in the world of transfer portal. I came from Birmingham Southern. We didn't. And we utilized a little bit out of need, but, I had everything I needed to win, a decent salary, beautiful campus, beautiful facilities, really enjoyed the community. But like I said, when I didn't really know this would come open, but as I saw, they were kind of struggling a little bit. I wasn't keeping my eye on just get me out of here, give me a Division I job. This may be, one of the maybe the only mid-level job that I really would have even pursued. And I didn't really even immediately pursue it. Kyle reached out and he kind of said, hey, I really think that you're someone that, because of what you've done on the offensive side and proven to build teams and consistent winning, I'd really like you to think about this. And when you match that with what it meant personally, it was a no-brainer.
So now tell me about what is the most rewarding part from your standpoint about coaching?
Yeah, is I think adding value to people. When I've got three godchildren of former players, and the most rewarding thing I think honestly is, and I've got a lot of rings and a lot of trophies and all that, and it was kind of funny because I used it as a tagline with my first recruiting class, because when we transitioned from Division I to Division III, even though we had no Division I players, right? I started from scratch. The wonderful NCAA didn't care. you know, they said, well, you still, the rule says you have to wait 3 years. And we're like, we don't have any scholarship kids. But so those guys couldn't go to the postseason. And I laid the charge with them of, you know, hey, man, I want to be a top 10 program when you leave, even if we can't go to the postseason. And I just kind of told those guys, you know, hey, trophies carry dust. Like, we might not have a trophy, but memories will last forever. And it was cool because when we made the World Series in 19, like, out of every class that came to that first World Series, that first recruiting class had the most guys in it. But to see those guys, and I think when those guys write you a note back 5 years after they've gone or 10 years after they've gone, and they talk about, man, it's what I learned there is why I'm so successful today. And then on the other side with coaches is seeing how many assistant coaches I've had that have had really successful careers. You know, Drew Breezy was my right-hand man as we built that down at Birmingham Southern for 10 years. And he's taken center college and taken it from honestly a nothing in our conference to where the last 2 years they've been a two seed in the NCAA regional. And next year I would think would be a one seed. You know, the former player of mine and assistant coach of mine, as I left Valdosta, took over, and he's going to do great there. But to see him be able to grow, I've got a pitching coach at Samford, a couple pitching coaches in Division II, I think, that are in line to take over their programs. And that's really, really rewarding. You know, leaving Valdosta was not easy, as special as this was. And I know I was only there a year, but I loved it. But knowing that that gives JD his first opportunity, it's like you can walk away and just kind of go done and feel really good about it.
How would you want a former player that's played for you to describe you? Once the time is gone where they graduate, how would you want a former player to describe you?
I think honest, hardworking, and held me accountable, you know, and wasn't afraid to push me.
Yeah. What about game day? And I'll let you go on this.
Yeah.
Game day. Have a 6 o'clock first pitch. Is there a routine you like to do? What do you take us through up to game day?
Yeah, I think there's always a routine, right? And I kind of started to tell my teams this last couple of years, and I hope I can say it on air, but on game day, it's kind of like, you know, wake up, work out, and then go kick somebody's ass with my team. But ours is a very routine-oriented sport. You know, pitchers are creature habit, like 40 minutes before I'm going to throw. So typically, if it's a night game, we would typically meet in early afternoon, just go over the scouting report of either the team and individuals that we'll be facing that night. Typically 2.5 hours before, we'll take a little BP, we'll come back in, let them relax a little bit. And then probably about 30 minutes before the game, you know, I kind of talk to him and I say the same thing every day, right? I just say, you know, it's a wonderful day today to just test our game. And that's all it is. I don't care about winning. I don't care about losing. We might lose. I don't care. Not that I don't really want to win, but it's like, I'm not judging myself by that, right? I want us to play well and just tell them I love you and I trust you, right? Because I'm not a coach that likes to micromanage on game day. Like, I know I'm going to put our guys in a really good position to win. And what they'll get from me in the dugout is a constant reminder. I'm not overbearing. I'm not throwing a ton of thoughts in their head because this game's hard enough. They're going to know they're prepared. But if there is something going on, you know, like say we have a bad start, we're down 5-1. I'm not throwing stuff in the dugout. It's like, hey, man, I wouldn't have liked this, but let's go win at 10-8, right? Let's figure out a way. But yeah, so those routines are big and it'll stay the same, but the message doesn't ever waver.
Well, lights went off. Yep. That's our sign to get out of here. Dan, it's been a pleasure talking to you.
Absolutely.
I've heard of many conversations, and thanks so much for joining us on the podcast. Looking forward to a great year. I'll be here before you know it.
Yep. Anytime. Thank you.
All right. That's EKU baseball head coach Dan Weisberg. He's been joining us on the podcast today. Thank you so much for tuning us in. Till next time, you've been kicking it with the Colonels.